This is According to Jim with Jim Joyner, McPherson's sports talk show.
Bullpups win! Bullpups win! Bullpups win it!
Listen every day, Monday through Friday, from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 96.7 FM KBBE or online at midkansasonline.com. According to Jim is your source for Chiefs talk.
10-5, touchdown, Kansas City, a 106-yard kickoff return right out of the gate.
The Royals.
Swinging a ground ball to third is fair. Fair ball up the left field line. Here's Cologne, and the Royals win it.
College football and college basketball.
8 to shoot, Hall, the runner. Loose ball. Good! The slipper still fits!
And everything else that's going on in the sports world.
Inside corner! The Royals, 2015 World Champions!
Now it's time for According to Jim. Here's your host, Jim Joyner.
Let's do this thing. Welcome into According to Jim, a Wednesday edition here on 96.7 FM, KBBE. You can hear us every Monday through Friday from 12:30 to 1. Also listen to us online at midkansasonline.com. And you know the drill. Find us on podcasts at soundcloud.com/KBBE Sports. Jim Joyner, and joined as always by the most popular man in McPherson, Steve Sell. Steve, we had a very eventful night for sports, not only here in McPherson, but worldwide with basketball beginning, the MLB playoffs underway. This is that wonderful time of year where everything is still in motion. Football's still going, baseball's still going, basketball's just starting. I mean, this is the time to be a sports fan.
It's worlds collide. That's the way I look at it. It's kind of like in April when we have the Final Four, Major League Baseball's basically having their season openers at the same time. So there's just those certain times in the year where everything comes together, and there's just so many different things going on that just catches the typical sports fans interest.
And it's the exact opposite of ESPY season, when nothing is happening on the day of the ESPYs, when baseball's in the All-Star break, no basketball, it just finished, football's coming. I mean, this is prime time, and boy, did we have a fun night last night with the NBA getting underway. And of course, the probably most traumatizing thing of the night happened about 4.5 minutes into the Boston Celtics' first game of the season, and after a wild offseason where Brad Stevens and the Celtics ownership went out and they lured their man, Gordon Hayward, who was potentially going to be the greatest college basketball player ever if he makes that half-court shot against Duke in 2010 in the national championship game. And he's run off a couple of good years in Utah with the Jazz, and boy, was he looking good in that Celtic green. And then, all of a sudden, everything went wrong in Boston.
They're going up. Oh, my goodness. Hayward came down so hard. Okay. Hayward broke his leg. Hayward has broken his leg. Hayward has broken his leg. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. And that is how quickly a season can change.
This is unbelievable.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean...
Kevin Harlan and Reggie Miller on the NBA on TNT. Boy, what a rough start to the NBA season. One of its faces, one of its best players, going down with an absolutely gruesome broken leg. I know they haven't announced it yet, but I think Kevin Harlan was right about 5 seconds after it happened. It has to be a broken leg.
Broken ankle is what they're saying today. So broken ankle, broken leg, it's pretty much all the same. And the Celtics just spent $128 million for 4 years of Gordon Hayward. So they're basically this year's going to probably be kind of written off. I don't know how fast it takes to come back from a broken ankle. I have no idea. The Never-Ending Basketball Association goes for 9 months, as I like to call it. So it'll be interesting to see if he is able to come back at the end of the year. But as for the immediate future, at least probably for two-thirds of the season, if not all the season, the Celtics won't have the guy that's supposed to be their best player.
And that was just one part of last night's festivities, and then the rest of the game happened, and the Cleveland Cavaliers knocked off the Celtics, and that's the matchup that we will be talking about all season long, and especially once we get closer to the playoffs, because last year the Celtics won the East, and part of that was due to the Cavaliers not going 100%. They would take some nights off, and they were fine with ending up being the 2 seed in the East and having to deal with that. They were completely fine with that.
Well, they knew nobody else in the East was any good.
Yeah, and that's Boston. The formula for success now.
They knew Boston would be the team they'd be in the finals no matter where they were, because the other teams are just, you know, not very good. So you see that, like you said, you're seeing that more and more. Teams would just as soon cost themselves a playoff spot, maybe even two, as long as their players are 100% healthy going into the playoffs, because let's face it, the good team should beat the bad teams no matter who they play.
And especially when you have LeBron James on your side, it makes things a little bit easier. And then the other NBA game, I don't know how many of you were able to stay up as late to watch it, as the game ended at about 12:30 last night out west. It was supposed to be a 9:30 start, and they didn't even tip until 10 o'clock.
So, well, they had the ring ceremony.
Well, count that in. You know what drives me crazy, Steve? Here's me getting up on my soapbox.
Uh-oh.
So when the Royals, they went through this stretch where it would be like a 7:10 first pitch. That would be the time that they say. Or 7:15, what they've done recently. Well, you know what drives me crazy is when it's 7:10 and they're not even back from commercial break and they're not even on the field yet.
Yeah.
And they don't throw the first pitch until 7:12.
7:10 means 7:10.
Now, if it's 7:11, I understand. 1 minute behind. But 7:12, two minutes late?
If you watch the big-time professional golf, when they have an 11:10 starting time, you look at your watch, it's 11:10. They are always on time.
Or at 12:37, Tiger Woods will tee off, and I guarantee that at 12:37, he has a club in hand and has the ball teed up and ready to go. Well, Tiger Woods, that's a lead into what we'll talk about in our next segment, sort of the impact that he has had on golf. And the reason we're talking about him is because he was cleared for all golf practicing activities. Now, we don't know when that means he will be tournament ready, but he is cleared to start swinging, and hopefully his back will hold up for him. And we're going to talk in detail about Tiger Woods here in about 10 minutes. But the other things that were happening last night, we mentioned the Warriors. We didn't even get to the final score of that game, as the Warriors ended up losing when it looked like they might have won at the buzzer. But Kevin Durant was a little bit late getting off his final shot, which would have been a fun way for Golden State to start the season. But instead, the Rockets, with newly added Chris Paul, they looked good last night, and they came back from down by at least 15 points.
The biggest takeaway I have from that game is that Golden State will not be 82-0. So we don't have to have So the 82-0 watch is over, and don't have to worry about that. And if I recall, didn't Golden State lose their first game last year and went on to win the NBA championship? So anyway, I think Golden State will be just fine. They're not going to lose more than 15 games all year. You can go ahead and bank it. 67 wins is what I'm saying, depending if they want to rest their guys or not. Again, injuries have to be taken into consideration, but Golden State's been pretty fortunate in this three-year run they've had. They haven't had too many guys get hurt.
You know what's funny about sports media sometimes is that there's this urge to go out and make these bold statements. Remember back in late July and early August when everybody was going, New England Patriots, they're going to go 16-0. The New York Jets, they're going to go 0-16. Golden State, they might go 82-0. Well, do you know how ridiculous that is to come out and make statements like that on either end? To come out and say, yeah, the Jets are going to go 0-16. I think they have 3 wins. And everybody's sitting around and acting like they're the worst team ever. And yeah, they might not have a quarterback, but these are NFL players. And the NFL is such an interesting league, and that's why it's weird that the Browns have just been so bad, is that these are the best players in the world. And on their best day, the best quarterback in the Jets system, I don't even know who it is that's starting right now, I think it's one of the McCowns, on his best day, he might be better than Tom Brady on an average or just below average day, and that's what can happen. And of course, the Jets did not beat the Patriots this week, but the Jets at 0-16, you've just got to be crazy to put bets down like that.
Oh, exactly.
The Browns are going to win a game later on this year.
Why is it the Miami, looking at, you know, on the other end, the Miami Dolphins 72 Super Bowl team is, you know, they're still popping corks because they know that no one's ever going to, you know, ever beat
them.
They
got to do that about 7 o'clock on Sunday after the Chiefs lost.
The Chiefs took care of that. So the Dolphins will still be the last perfect team. And I'm beginning to think that may be a mark that never falls. Patriots had a chance, you know, at one point, the 1 year, but that just too many things in NFL There's no way, and there shouldn't be a team that goes winless, although Cleveland is making a very strong case for that.
And what year was it, 2010 or so, when the Lions were 0-16?
0-16, I think that's when they were able to get Matthew Stafford with the number one draft pick.
So that would have been like 09.
Yeah, then. So, and Matthew Stafford, of course, has gotten them, got them into the playoffs and gotten them back to respectability, that's for sure.
And got a nice payday as well as the highest paid NFL player of all time. That's hard to say.
Well,
speaking of perfect, the Bullpup soccer team is now perfect at home this season after winning last night 5-1 over Circle. And it was a game that they really could have won bigger, but I know that the bigger picture here is the playoffs and worrying about what's going to happen next week. But they did pick up a win, and they were almost perfect in terms of not even allowing a goal at home this season.
And the goal they allowed last night came with 0.0001 on the clock. In fact, they had to have the officials confer to make sure they thought that the goal came before the halftime, because there's no buzzer in soccer. There's no horn.
Your replay system back in Topeka.
Yeah, there's no horn. So Coach Adrian admitted they were disappointed they gave up that goal, but it also kind of motivated them in the second half. Yet, Circle, you know, played pretty on even terms there in the second half. It was 1-1 in the second half, but that was one of those games where the Bullpups knew they were in total control, and they jumped on them early, and they just had a breakdown. But Coach Adrian said that's how we lost the league championship, because we had a breakdown just like that. So definitely a learning process in that game.
And Bullpup sports and playoff action starting to pick up here as Bullpup volleyball won last night and swept its triangular against El Dorado and Bueller. And how about this? They get to turn around on Saturday at Substate at Ulysses and play Bueller again.
McPherson and Bueller are 18 miles apart, and they're going to travel 229 miles to play each other.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, and then if they win that one, Hayes, Ulysses, very similar. I think one's 25-8, the other's like 26-7. I'm guessing just on pedigree, Hayes would probably be the team McPherson would play in the finals. Ulysses does not play the teams that Hayes does. Ulysses plays a lot of 2A schools, 1A schools. You know, they're so far away, they'll play whoever will drive to, you know, to play them. I mean, man, I can't even imagine being a student at Ulysses, and you rack up the frequent flyer miles, that's for sure, on the road, so to speak. And boy, if they have some, I think they've got to play Winfield in district football, if I'm not mistaken, this week. The game is in Ulysses. You'd think the two schools could come together and say, hey, let's meet in McPherson or something like that, or, you know, Hayes, or, you know, someplace like that, because it's, I can't even imagine, it's got to be over 300 miles, I'm sure it is, from Ulysses to Winfield. And, you know, I remember on our college, when I played college golf, we went to Liberal from Independence. So that was about an 8-hour drive. We turned around the next week. The schedule was just ridiculous. We had to go to Dodge City the next week. That was like 5 hours for us. And then we had to go to Garden City. So, you know, we spent the whole season on the road. I don't think I ever went to class for 3 weeks.
I think I just had my whole life handed to me on a silver platter by playing high school sports in the Sunflower League, because I can remember back then, so I guess maybe at the beginning of my high school time, 15, 16, 17 years old, and at Olathe East, we would have to play Lawrence Free State, we would have to play Lawrence High, we would have to play Leavenworth, with as well as the Shawnee Mission schools and the other Olathe schools, and I can remember thinking, why on earth are we having to go all the way to Free State? I mean, that is just stupid. Why would we drive 45 minutes? Why would we drive an hour to go to Leavenworth? And now that I look back at it, man, we had it good.
Yeah.
If that was the furthest we really had to go in league play, yeah, a little drive down K-10 and over to the west side of Lawrence, not too bad
not
at all.
Not too bad at all. And you know, next year when the district football, there's a chance we could drive halfway across the state for the first round, because it's going to be seeded. We could play Independence or maybe DeSoto. Well, probably not DeSoto, but, you know, DeSoto's pretty good. But in the first round, you're going to play a lesser team.
Or you could play Bueller.
Or you could play
down the street.
Yeah, like we're going to do probably in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah, we will talk a little bit more about that toward the end of this week. Tomorrow, when we normally will do our Bullpup football preview day, well, the Chiefs play. on Thursday. And so I think we need to spend a good amount of time doing about 50-50 between Bullpup football preview as well as the Chiefs as they take on the Raiders tomorrow night. But coming up after the break, we mentioned it a minute ago, that Tiger Woods is being clear to get back to his golf activities, and I think we should take a little bit of time and address the impact that he has had on the game of golf and what it sort of meant for Tiger to be in his prime, and maybe he won't be getting back to his Tiger days of winning majors and winning 14 of them, but how important he was to the game of golf. So we'll do that on the other side. You're listening to According to Jim on 96.7 FM, KBBE.
You're listening to the According to Jim with Jim Joyner podcast. According to Jim with Jim Joyner was brought to you by Overhead Door Company of North Central Kansas, Meade Liquor, Great Plains Federal Credit Union, and Four Seasons Realtors. You can also listen live Monday through Friday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 96.7 FM KBBE or online at midkansasonline.com.
Welcome back onto According to Jim, 96.7 FM, KBBE, Jim Joyner, Steve Sell, as we are rolling here in the midway point of this week. We just got done talking a little bit about Bullpup volleyball, Bullpup soccer, picking up wins last night, and of course the beginning of the NBA season. But some of the news that's popped up this week is that Tiger Woods, old Eldrick, is back to being cleared to practice. And that doesn't mean that he'll necessarily be popping up on the PGA Tour this weekend, but for Tiger Woods, a guy who absolutely dominated golf from, I don't know, about 1997 to 2008, I figured that you and I, Steve, could take a minute to just reflect on not only how good Tiger Woods was, but how much of an impact that he had on the sport. And the question that I ask myself sometimes is, how are we going to be able to describe Tiger Woods to people in 20 years? Because there are some people like this. I can think of two examples off the top of my head. O.J. Simpson means a whole different thing to you than he does to me. Because I wasn't even born right when the O.J. Simpson murder trial was going on. And then Michael Jackson. He means a whole lot different to you than he does to me, because the only thing I know Michael Jackson as is all the alleged assaults with the kids and the Neverland Ranch, where you think of Michael Jackson and Thriller and hit after hit, or you might even think Jackson 5.
I'm Jackson 5, baby. Yeah. I mean, I'm Jackson 5 because that was when I was about in high school when the Jackson 5, or even, yeah, in high school when Jackson 5 was popular, and, who was the other one?
O.J.
O.J. I can still remember very vividly O.J.'s run against UCLA that beat him 21-20 in the Rose Bowl, and just how great he was at USC, and then at Buffalo going over the 2,000-yard mark. And he became a totally different person, you know, once he left football. And it's just kind of tragic what happened to both O.J. and Michael Jackson. But I can remember both at the start, you know, and I also can remember Tiger Woods at the start. Tiger Woods revolutionized golf. He came along at the perfect time. Arnold Palmer was, you know, nothing more than, you know, just obligatory, but he was just, you know, he was playing, but he wasn't competitive. Jack Nicklaus was at the end of his career. They needed somebody to step up, and Tiger Woods was able to draw in fans, not just golfers, but just the average sports fan, and a lot of people became golfers just because of Tiger Woods. They, you know, he just brought such a change in golf. You know, he showed that you know, it wasn't just a game for rich people, which is the perception of a lot of people. They say, well, golf's just for rich people. The average just an average Joe could go out and you know, they see what Tiger Woods did, and it inspired them to become a golfer.
And sort of back to this question, how are we going to explain Tiger Woods to a kid who's 12 years old in 2032, when he's going to say, what was Tiger Woods like? Well, the first things that might pop into his mind might be some of the sexual adventures of Tiger Woods, where he got in trouble and had to have a press conference with his mom sitting in the front row, yeah, talking about, yeah, I called this prostitute and had her come to Washington, D.C. It's going to be hard to change some people's minds when it comes to Tiger Woods, and hard to explain how dominant he was. I mean, he had video games named after him. He had a whole different line of Nike clothes and golf clubs. And how many people do you think played out at Turkey Creek before Tiger Woods was relevant and would wear a red shirt on Championship Sunday?
Exactly.
And then Tiger Woods comes rolling around, and every single golfer out there at Turkey Creek puts on their red shirt and says, yeah, I want to be Tiger Woods and wear my victory red.
And the thing is, Tiger Woods hit the ball so far when he was young. The thing is, he hit it farther than anybody. Now everybody seems like in the last 20 years, they can hit the ball as far as Tiger. So, you know, the game has definitely changed, and that's for sure. But, you know, the thing is, you know, what he did later on overshadows what he did. And it's too bad that people won't remember what he did when he first came onto the scene. And, you know, you can remember those tournaments after he won. He'd cry in his dad's arms and things like that. And, you know, toward the end, he kind of became kind of a not a sympathetic figure at all. In fact, it was kind of a tragedy what happened to him and the thing is. But I just don't know if Tiger can come back knowing that he's not going to be the best in the world, will never be the best in the world again. These young guys are just too big, too strong, too good. And I don't know if Tiger can accept being a mediocre golfer.
There's another point to be made here, too, that when Tiger Woods really started his run, there wasn't anybody right there that could match him stride for stride. And Phil Mickelson had a couple of good years. Angel Cabrera had a couple of good tournaments, and it's not that people couldn't go beat him, because they did, but there was nobody to test him week in and week out. And there's always the thing that people talk about, that on a Sunday, if Tiger Woods is in contention, and maybe even two or three shots back of the lead, that person who's playing on about the 12th hole and they know Tiger's on the 15th, if they hear that Tiger roar from the stands coming up three holes ahead of him, they start to think about it, and they might miss a couple of putts. And that Tiger just had this mentally dominating presence every time he walked onto a golf course on a Sunday, and it sort of made him refuse to lose, and all these other opponents crumble around him.
Well, he got his invincibility stripped of him, and, you know, there's not that fear factor now. Even if he comes back and is, you know, say 80% what he used to be, they're not going to fear him anymore. I mean, the fear factor's over. When he lost in the PGA to
Y.E. Yang?
Y.E. Yang, yeah. Beat him in the PGA. That was the first signal right there that, you know, Tiger's not invincible. And, you know, now he's just another one of the guys. And like I say, is he going to be able to accept being a mediocre golfer? You know how Jack Nicklaus was. Jack Nicklaus says, if I can't win, I'm not going to compete. And I got a feeling that's the way it's going to be for Tiger. Tiger needs to, you know, kind of work on his image a little bit and, you know, give back, you know, to the game what the game gave him, because it gave him an awful lot.
And another thing of people emulating Tiger Woods, well, not only had golf for a long time been just kind of dominated by old-looking white guys who just walked around and shook hands and kissed babies and did that, Tiger Woods brought this edge to golf, where I was doing a little bit of research for this subject today and went back on YouTube, and I was watching a couple of tournaments and watching Tiger Woods play, and Tiger Woods was not afraid to slam his club into the ground and throw his club at a bag and sit there and get mad, when that was never really a thing before. Now, Steve, how many times have you been playing golf in the last 10 years that you've been playing with somebody, or you have personally done it yourself, where you have watched somebody throw a club after chunking a 150-foot little pitch shot? How many times have you seen that happen, and how many times was that really happening before Tiger Woods?
Well, when I was younger, I could say I threw a few clubs. Now, ever since I broke a club one time at Rolling Acres, this has been probably 30 years ago, because Turkey Creek wasn't even open then. But I broke a club, and I picked it up, and I didn't realize on the club, on the shaft, there was a little protrusion there, and I cut my hand. And ever since then, I have not, you know, I don't think about that. Now, will I yell something out on the golf course if I hit a bad shot? Oh, yeah. I'll still do that, but not as much as I used to. But every once in a while, I'll let it go. It's a little blue, but I've really tried to cut back as much as I can on that.
Yeah, we're pretty good about not using that four-letter language here on the air. And, Steve, I was thinking about this as we were leaving McPherson Stadium last night, that something that's really cool about this show is that you've been around and people in McPherson have known who you are for 40-ish years. And probably before the last few years, before you got onto radio, people knew your name and they knew you were writing and knew you were always there at the games. But probably a lot of people didn't know a whole lot about your personality, and because all it was is you just kind of writing straight up and maybe a couple of columns they could tell. But this show kind of allows people to learn a little bit more about Steve Sell.
Well,
Steve the Blur Sell.
Well, you know, not, I don't know how many people in McPherson really know. I mean, I have my closest confidants. They really know me. But, yeah, a lot of people probably don't know me. And
he was just a mystery man for
40
years.
That's fine by me. I mean, I'm not one of those people that just really, you know, wants to grab the headlines, that's for sure.
Yeah, they go into the roundhouse or they go over to the bowling alley and they see him on the Hall of Fame and they go, who is this guy?
Yeah, well,
and now they're learning a little bit more about Steve Sell, breaking his club and cutting his hand open. So still talking a little bit about Tiger Woods. After the break, we might dive into it a little bit more and then talk a little bit about the ALCS and NLCS coming up tonight between the Yankees and the Astros. Of course, that series now tied 2-2, and the Dodgers have a chance to take a four-game sweep at Wrigley Field over the defending world champions. We're back after this on According to Jim on 96.7 FM KBBE.
You're listening to the According to Jim with Jim Joyner podcast. According to Jim with Jim Joyner was brought to you by Overhead Door Company of North Central Kansas, Meath Liquor, Great Plains Federal Credit Union, and Four Seasons Realtors. You can also listen live Monday through Friday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 96.7 FM KBBE or online at midkansasonline.com.
Final segment of According to Jim here on 96.7 FM, KBBE, or online at midkansasonline.com. And of course, if you've missed any of our shows or any of today's show, you can find it on podcast at soundcloud.com/KBBE Sports. Jim Joyner, Steve Salas, we're wrapping up this Tiger Woods topic after learning that he is cleared for golf activities again. He can practice and get himself ready for a few tournaments in the upcoming months. I don't know how long it will be before he gets back, or even if Mr. Eldrick Woods will get back to his prime state of when he was absolutely dominating golf. And for any of you that have not read this story, I stumbled upon it last spring as Wright Thompson, who is a writer for ESPN the magazine, posted this very long but very detailed story about Tiger Woods, and not as much about before his incidents with women of the night and after, but more between the stretch from when his father died in 2006 up until the night happened after Thanksgiving in 2009 with the golf club through the back windshield of his car down in Orlando. In that time frame where it was talking about how Tiger went off the rails a little bit and he was trying to do a lot of things that his dad did. Of course, his dad, Earl, was a Green Beret in the military, and Tiger was going to all these different Navy SEALs training facilities and trying to somehow summon his dad back to life again, and how this story is very different than a lot of people foresee it as and understand Tiger Woods. And he was still dominating golf through a lot of this, and then his body kind of gave out on him. I encourage you to go find it. I don't know the name of the article, but if you search Wright Thompson and Tiger Woods on ESPN the magazine, you will be able to find it. Very good read.
Yeah, I don't know if Tiger will ever get back, but I look at it this way. Tom Watson contended for the British Open at 59. There's no reason Tiger Woods at 42 can find for 1 week that magic again. He might win one more major. He might even win a tournament, but he'll never get to 18 that Jack Nicklaus ever won.
So as we transition into some upcoming things tonight, number one is that Game 5 of the American League Championship Series between the Yankees and the Astros is now tied up at 2 games apiece, and this afternoon, with a 4 o'clock start Central Time, a very fun 5 o'clock start in New York, in the Bronx, for Game number 5, and potentially the last game of baseball in New York for the year. Dallas Keuchel against Masahiro Tanaka. A huge game before they go back to Houston for Game 6.
And Tanaka is going to be on his game. He's either great or he's awful. I predict he's going to be on. I'm picking New York to win that, and then they're going to find a way to win one out of two in Houston. They're going to have to, you know, beat Verlander or the next pitcher. That's the thing. Houston's only got two really good starting pitchers. I'm still picking the Yankees to win it, and Yankees are still going to win the whole thing.
And then on the National League side, the Los Angeles Dodgers, who, of course, have been the storyline and the punchline of jokes for the last few years when it comes to the playoffs, that they haven't been able to get over the hump and win that big game, win the big series, get back to the World Series. Of course, they haven't won the World Series since 1988, but they now have a 3-0 lead over the Cubs with Game 4 coming up tonight at 8 o'clock on TBS. Alex Wood against Jake Arrieta, and the Dodgers have a chance to clinch the sweep at Wrigley. And last night, Steve, the Cubs fans were not too thrilled with a 6-1 loss, and they were heading for the exits early.
Yeah, and I still think the Cubs are gonna get this thing back to 3-2. It's gonna go back to LA, but they just look rather listless, Jim. I'm just not very impressed with them right now. They just don't seem to be, you know, at the top of their game. And right now, I'm starting to say Dodgers are gonna win the series after I'd pick the Cubs.
So now is a good time to point out how incredible that run was for the Royals in 2014 and 2015 to make back-to-back World Series. Now, of course, a little bit of luck is involved, but what a dominating run that they had to even make it to two World Series. Now, the Cubs have made it to back-to-back-to-back trips to the NLCS, but if they don't make it to the World Series, that's only one in those 3 years, and the Royals made it in back-to-back years, which has not really happened. I'm trying to run through my brain. Philadelphia Phillies made it in 08 and 09, but yeah, they only won one of them.
Yeah, and Yankees, of course, back in the early 2000s. But, yeah, you're right. In fact, I think the back-to-back is what really took everything out of the Royals in 16. And then this year, more of the same. They just weren't quite good enough. But, hey, they had back-to-back World Series. We can live off that for quite a while.
That'll do it for Wednesday's show. Somehow we still have a job coming up tomorrow. Chiefs preview as they take on the Oakland Raiders on Thursday Night Football. And Bullpup Football preview, we will have everything you need to know for that. And then Friday, we preview the big, big weekend of sports coming up. That'll do it. He's Steve Sell. I'm Jim Joyner. Thanks for listening to According to Jim on 96.7 FM KBBE.
According to Jim with Jim Joyner was brought to you by Overhead Door Company of North Central Kansas, Mead's Liquor, Great Plains Federal Credit Union, and Four Seasons Realtors. Make sure to listen to According to Jim every weekday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. right here on 96.7 FM KBBE.